Welcome to the Pulse of New Hampshire. I am J-Dog, and this is Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and it is hosted by a true Renaissance man, a doting grandfather, a baseball awards presenter. He is also an author, an athlete, as well as a doting grandfather, a loving husband, and the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio, Eddie Papowski's number one fan, Mr. Tom Raffio.
Hey, thanks, Jay. You know, now that the world's opening up again with all these events, I'm taking you everywhere I go for that stirring introduction. And speaking of the world reopening again, for the first time in probably 2.5 years, our parking lot at Delta Dental is completely filled with employee colleagues. So it was great to see all the human connections, which is actually, Jay, relevant for today's show, because with me is the CEO of Monadnock Family Services, or MFS, Phil Wysick, who is a longtime veteran in the mental health arena. Phil, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time, as always.
My pleasure, Tom. Nice to talk with you today.
You know, one of the things I'm told when we do the show is people always want to know the background of the guests, and you have a long and storied career in mental health. So I think it might be good to take the listening audience, you know, through your career. And of course, as you know, above the neck health is one of my passions as well. And, you know, for many years have been working with, former Supreme Chief Justice John Broderick, you know, on mental health awareness. So I'm so glad that you're joining me, you know, for the show. But Phil, take us through your long and storied career.
Well, thanks, Tom. My pleasure. Yeah, you know, I've been involved in the community mental health system in Massachusetts and New Hampshire and a little bit in Connecticut since 1988, when my first job out of graduate school. So my career has been in the public not-for-profit sector. I started out as a case manager and then a therapist, and before you know it, I was a supervisor and then a director. And before long, I had an administrative career. So I've been in the CEO job at Monadnock Family Services for the last 10 years. So what originally drew me to community mental health was the fact that so many of our kids, be they adults or children, clients, are the underdogs in many ways in society. And a vibrant community mental health system in any state is an important part of the human service safety net, the healthcare safety net. And it's oftentimes very under recognized and under supported by the larger society. So it's been a great career. It's been a wonderful experience for me.
That's great. And we appreciate it, because obviously the head's been disconnected from the body for many years, and you can't have good overall health without good mental health. And I've been on the road a lot with over the years, pre-pandemic and now virtually, with Chief Justice Broderick. And, you know, mental health awareness is on the top of, you know, everybody's mind. And it ranges from the, you know, the big stories you hear, the suicides, et cetera, suicide preventions, but also what I call the quiet, silent sufferers, you know, the A student, the star athlete, who everybody thinks is fine, but maybe, you know, silently, you know, suffering. So kudos to you for, you know, being passionate in this field. So I'm thinking from all that I've read and from what I've experienced that during COVID, mental health issues have probably exacerbated. So I don't know if there are metrics to support that or empirical evidence, but why don't you broach that topic with us?
Yeah, well, thanks. I would say that anybody working in the field going through the pandemic of the last couple of years has seen an increase in demand for services and people reaching out more, because, you know, our lives have been so disrupted over the last couple of years, economically and socially, even, places of worship have had to change. Kids have been not in school, in school, out of school. It's been a terrible, anxious and stressful time. As you remember, in the early days of the pandemic, we didn't have a lot of information. We had a lot of confusion about economically, things were in a turmoil. So I think the pandemic has drawn a new spotlight on mental health concerns, and people have come to realize that it's an important part of health that they may have not appreciated before that. But I think you're right, Tom, that a lot of people didn't need a pandemic to suffer mental health conditions and suffer silently because they've been either afraid to reach out for help or because they've been afraid to be stigmatized as someone who needs mental health care. I think that's slowly changing over time, but it's still, unfortunately, very prevalent in society.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things I like to say with my own management team, and, you know, I talked to John Broderick about this, is that, you know, if someone approaches you in your office and says, well, you know, I messed up my knee, I need meniscus surgery, and I'm going to be out for 2 weeks. Well, that's a relatively comfortable conversation. You know, the employee colleagues out for, you know, 5 to 10 days, and everybody goes about their business. If the same employee comes in and says either themselves or, you know, their spouse or a family member has a, you know, mental health challenge, and obviously it becomes, you know, a more uncomfortable, you know, conversation. And so I always like to say to, you know, my employee colleagues, you know, what we want to strive for the day that we can, you know, have a conversation about mental health in the same level of the parameters of, you know, a meniscus surgery. And I think it's coming, but you're right. There's still obviously, you know, stigmas associated with it. There is also, you know, obviously confidentiality issues that you have to be careful about, et cetera. But I do think we're, you know, I do think we're making progress. And I know, you know, speaking from, you know, personal experience here at Delta Dental, all the training we've done is, you know, paid off. We had a, you know, again, I'm not going to use any names, but we had a, you know, an employee that was struggling, and a new employee that was struggling. And it turned out it related to, you know, a family member, you know, having some mental health challenges, which was hurting the performance of the employee. And I think without the training, who knows, the employee may not have lasted, but now with that sensitivity, you know, they have. So switching gears just a little bit. So Monadnock Family Services has been around for over 100 years and serves the Monadnock region. So how is fun? I always get this question. How is funding? How do you get funded?
Well, like other nonprofits, right? It's always a little bit of a struggle to keep the lights on and doors open and people, compensated and things like that. We have been really helped through the pandemic years in many ways by some of the extra funding from the federal government and state government. So it's been helpful. All that stuff is drying up, but in my long years in the work, Tom, it's never been easy. It's never been easy. And there's lots of, I mean, that's a whole other show about health insurance and Medicaid funding and Medicare and the very, very complex healthcare system we've created in the United States over decades. Long story there, but just suffice it to say, every nonprofit has to be a very lean organization, has to be a very, prudent and careful about what they do and the decisions we make, because it's not a normal sort of marketplace like the, you know, for-profit world. So it's a struggle and it's a challenge.
You have to be mission sensitive yet strategically frugal. And, you know, just finally, after literally I've been working on it for 25 years, we're finally getting a Medicaid dental benefit for adults. So obviously totally understand the challenges where, you know, it's hard to get, you know, all dentists to accept Medicaid patients if the government's only paying, you know, 30 cents on the dollar, and, you know, all right, of those challenges of a, you know, complex system, which really candidly dates back to World War II when the employers became responsible for employee benefits because they couldn't give the employees raises. So culturally, there's a long history that probably you and I won't be able to unwind, you know, in our career. But suffice to say, you must be really creative as well with grants, and can the public help? Can companies listening to this help? Your website is mfs.org. Quite simple, Monadnock Family Services. But how can we help? How can the public health help, and as well as employers?
Well, that's a great question too. You know, I would say the first thing the public can do is have an open mind about people with mental health conditions and try to learn more about these health challenges that people may face, be it depression or bipolar illness or, certain stress disorders or addictions. I think as a rule, the public is not very literate when it comes to mental health conditions. And that makes us all sort of, difficult to talk about stuff we don't know. So the first thing I would say is that the public can be receptive to and open to learning about mental health conditions, right? And like any other nonprofit, donations and support, financial support are hugely welcome at any time. In our experience here in the Monadnock region, I can say that we have a very generous community of people who are supporting the work we do. They know we provide an important element in the healthcare world, and they want to support us and make sure we're successful.
And that's what I find in a lot of my nonprofit work. And as you probably know, I run the gamut between human services and arts. That people in New Hampshire, are generous, and caring. So I see Jay. So Jay, how about if we take a break?
Let's do that. This is Northeast Delta Dental Radio this week, as Phil Wysick, the CEO of Monadnock Family Services, is the guest on this edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. We'll take a quick break and then come right back here, as this is the pulse of New Hampshire. We're back. Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Jay Dog, alongside Tom Raffio, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And also Phil Wysick is the guest this week, the CEO of Monadnock Family Services. We're having a great conversation about Monadnock Family Services.
Well, thanks, Jay. And Phil, back to you. So we're talking about mental health as part of, overall health and, population health. So that sort of connection between, population health and the importance that mental health plays in public health. As we briefly alluded to earlier, I think there's more and more of understanding, but do you think we have a ways to go in people making that connection?
I do, Tom. I think people think public health as, somebody from this town that goes and inspects restaurants or something like that. But I think people have realized that public health was an important part of dealing with the pandemic. And there is a public health aspect to community mental health, because our health as a society can influence each of our individual healths, each of our own wellness. So, for example, in our region, our community health improvement plan, which is a public health document, was clear that it needed to have a mental health, behavioral health component to the plan. And this was a grassroots sort of document to say, how can we be a better community vis-a-vis health? What do we have to do? And it, in addition to behavioral health, it was about emergency preparedness and food access and active living, things like healthcare access and, reducing risk factors to illness and protective factors. And out of that has grown the idea that we're trying to make sure the Monadnock region is a trauma-informed community, because trauma, psychological trauma, is such a powerful impact on all our health and wellness. It's more prevalent than people suspect, and it's more impactful on everyone's health and carries with it a great deal of suffering, as you can imagine. So we're trying to become a trauma-informed community around here.
So why don't you define, I think I'm pretty well connected and have heard that term, but it might be good if you maybe define it, for the community. And do you think Monadnock region is taking the lead on that and can be a role model, for other communities?
Well, I would say that there are many other communities in the United States trying to be a trauma-informed place. Some of them are big cities, and the housing service in a big city. Some are schools, some are other sort of organizations, some are countywide like we're trying to be. So, there are probably around 400 or more communities that are trying to do exactly this. And what we're doing, what all these things have in common, these places, is to bring in a broad swath of the community, you know, businesses, clergy, educators, healthcare providers, law enforcement, county governments, city governments, representatives of all that, to understand what trauma is all about, to make sure trauma awareness is built into the policies and practices that organizations operate under, so that we're not re-traumatizing people. And basically, Tom, what we're talking about is a heavy psychological blow that comes upon people from as a result of violence or racism or some adversity or some, you know, tragedy like a car accident or a significant illness, or, you know, even alienation can be a traumatic thing because it builds and builds and builds. So we're hoping a trauma-informed community can be more understanding about these issues and how they impact health, more compassionate to people who experience trauma, and so that people with lived experience can find their way back to health in easy and quick ways. So it's a tall order, and we in the region are just early days in this, but it's growing. And frankly, as I've tried to get it organized here, people are coming out of the woodwork and they want to join the effort because they know it's so important. So that's really encouraging.
And that, you know, trauma is, like you say, it's the full gamut. It can be an adverse childhood experience. It can be a car accident. It can be domestic violence. So have you gotten a charrette together? Have you gotten like focus groups together? How have you gathered the entire village, so to speak?
Well, at the moment, we're trying to get our house in order and make an organizational plan for how we will tackle this. And we're pursuing some avenues to hire a community organizer that can help map some of this out. People ask me, how are you going to measure whether this is happening or not, right? And my easy way of thinking about it is that, you know, if I could take a map of the Mananac region and I could find the trauma-informed programs or projects or practices that are happening, I would put a pin in the map for every one of them. And, wild guess, maybe there are 10 of them in our region right now. You know, school here, church there, the House of Correction. You know, in a year's time, I want there to be 20. And 2 years after that, I want there to be 50. So that these efforts are aligned and they're growing and they're supported. And that's how we're going to get to be a trauma-informed community.
You know, it's interesting because I'm sure you'll find as you sort of do this audit, I use that with a small A, that in silos, you know, some of this work is happening, and just to try to get the common thread together and using the same nomenclature and, you know, and people in the public knowing where all the resources are, that may end up being the biggest challenge, you know, once you kind of do the assessment of, you know, who is trauma informed and the different resources that are out there.
Well, I think, you know, early on, we'll have to do a lot of educating about this and a lot of conversations about what trauma informed thinking is, and to give resources to those efforts that are, you know, in the early stages to see if we can help them get to a higher place. So it's a tall order. And the only thing that keeps me going is the enthusiasm of people behind it who are organizing themselves and working on committees and trying to find dollars to support this and trying to find research that backs it up and working on communication. So this is a growing thing, and it's very exciting to be part of that. You know, when we first started, there were maybe 6 people behind this. Now there are 36 people.
That's awesome. And I think more and more, you know, people are seeing, you know, NFL commercials about mental health awareness. I think more and more people are, you know, celebrities are talking about it. So I think it's a good time to, to engage, you know, this initiative. So Monadnock Family Services, MFS.org. What do you think, if you would put your long career in a bubble and you'd say, what's been the biggest change in this field, mental health awareness and wellness, in the last 30 years? One obvious one is, you know, people are starting to talk about it, but what else? I know the services have been sort of cyclical. There was a time where New Hampshire was, you know, really state of the art of mental health services, and then not. So how do you see the evolution of mental and emotional wellness?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And I guess I would say a few things about this. Over the last few decades, I think we have seen in the field many more treatment interventions that really work, that there's strong evidence behind them. There's a science behind them. Many things are proven effective, you know, in many studies. So we're not, you know, operating blind with bad knowledge. On the other hand, our ability to understand the workings of the human brain is still very much in its infancy, right? As a field in healthcare, mental health, psychiatry has been sort of a stepchild for too long, right? So our understanding about these conditions and how to help them is pretty still, very, very rudimentary. But be that as it may, things actually work. Treatment actually helps. And it's not just medicine that helps. Medicine is a very powerful tool. It's not the only tool. And we know that we've seen many great successes in returning to health and recovery in lots of ways. So I think there, you know, if you ask me, I would say the field has seen a great more, much more hope and much more powerful impact on what we can do. I would also say that some of the stigma we talked about is slowly melting. You know, things like mental health first aid gives people some tools and a structure to help others. That's something that wasn't present, you know, 20 years ago. So I think we're slowly seeing more of an awareness about these important health conditions as a part of health, and people aren't as scared of them as they once were.
So you have, I would say, a realistic, optimistic approach, but recognizing, you know, that, you know, we are a resource constraint. But I like the terms you use, you know, where there is some hope, we're breaking down the stigma. You know, there are courses of treatments, you know, that work, you know, and in my dealings with the topic, I mean, it's great to see, you know, law enforcement, you know, talking about it, you know, veterans, you know, not too long ago, there was a symposium at UNH, the Halea Symposium, and a lot of the topic was, you know, mental health on, you know, college campuses. So I think it's coming, and we just need to keep pushing it, and with leadership, you know, like yourself, I mean, I think it's going to happen. So how do you love your living in the area that you do, and great time of year, right?
For sure. I'm a big fan of the Monadnock region. I've lived here for the last 10 years or so. It's been a wonderful community to be part of. And I think we have a lot of social capital around here. And in my little slice of the world, members of the community have been very, very clear to me about wanting to make sure our organization succeeds. And that's not true in many places. So it's
definitely an engaged community, and love the area. Love your leadership. Those of you listening, mfs.org, serving the Monadnock region for over 100 years. Phil Wysick, tremendous leadership. Thank you. And it takes people, Jay, like Phil and Justice Broderick, to all of us, you know, push this initiative forward. So thank you, Phil, for joining us.
Thank you, appreciate Tom. You. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil. It's Phil Wysick. He is the CEO of Monadnock Family Services, as well as Tom Raphael, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I am J-Dog. We have another edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio next week here on the Pulse of New Hampshire.